Welcome into another episode of That's
So Cincinnati.
Silent Phil on the ones and twos, Sherry Coolidge, along with yours truly, Jason Williams.
Back this week. I missed you.
Welcome back.
I missed everyone.
Tanned, energetic, full of vitamin D.
I have to say, I missed the sunshine.
Back to gloomy old Cincinnati. At least the temperature isn't too bad. And we had a nice weekend, which you missed because you were in even
Florida.
Sunnier Florida.
I did, yes. So,
well, what'd you miss last week?
Well, I pretty much worked on vacation.
Yes, you did.
There's a lot of Tamaya Denard stories. Her resignation happened while I was away. But it turns out in today's world, you can work remotely, as yes. I did.
Yes, you can.
I had to get back, though. Do you know why?
Why?
There's a primary coming up.
Yes, there is.
You know, and you...
Huge.
Scott Wortman, our, you know, politics reporter, and you write the column. The two of you have been on it. Everything I need to know as a reader, and I love it. But when it comes to actual election night, it's all hands on deck. And, you know, our editor, Carl, is like, you'll be back, right? I'm like, I'm back. I understand.
She's back.
So, yes.
Let's talk about that primary. Let's give our That's So Cincinnati official preview of the primary.
All right, let's run it down. I'll throw out topics and you start.
Great.
Commish race.
Whew.
You helped host a debate. You did some question asking. The Inquirer had a commissioner's race debate last week while I was gone. Followed along on Twitter a little bit. And then we talked about it, of course. What did you think?
What did I think about that? It was a bit of a snoozer. I thought Alicia Reese was clearly the candidate who stood out above the other two.
Alicia Reese is who Alicia Reese is today. I mean, she knows a thing or two about campaigns.
Yes, she
and
does.
And as she said on her mailer that you guys wrote about, she's been endorsed in 7 previous elections.
Yes.
By the Democrats. And she knows her stuff and what she's doing.
She does. And so I have been really, really torn, as many, many other folks who pay close attention on both sides of the aisle to this race. I heard some polling about some polling information this morning. And if you're going to force me to make a prediction on that race.
Can you tell us about the poll? I haven't heard. This is our first conversation this morning.
Yeah, it was just something I was basically told that, you know, she was polling more favorably than the others in that race, and that so I'm just putting two and two together, and I'm looking at the numbers from the Board of Elections, and I am going to say Alicia ekes it out, but I wouldn't be surprised if Connie wins.
Okay.
So,
you know, both a lot of experience. I don't know what's going to happen. And a lot of times you can kind of guess what these races, but this is one that I think is actually going to be a surprise on election night.
I think what's pushing me over the edge with Alicia is that Alicia has a base of support. Connie doesn't have a real base of support. Alicia, from her days on city council and as vice mayor, there's the base of support of city Democrats that she's built up over 20 years in local politics. Connie hasn't really built up. She's won a really tough state house district multiple times, but as a suburban Montgomery Democrat, it's hard. I mean, she comes out of the days where there wasn't really a base of support of Democrats, you know, outside of the city. And so I'm sort of basing it around the history and the name and the support that they both have gotten. And I think I have to go with Alicia in that one.
So something I think that is interesting in this race, and I, you know, I don't pretend to be an expert by any means, but what has happened? So, you know, part of the conventional theory is that, you know, Connie does have a lot of money and that there was going to be a lot of advertising that's really was going to play into her favor. And that's in any race. But I feel like the coronavirus has kind of overtaken you know, anything like a lot of this election and this media. I mean, it's so prevalent when you turn on the television or even when you're reading things. Mm-hmm. And on our website, it's in the main a lot. And it's very important, our health. And it's ramping up. It's not, you know, going the other way. And I feel like it's kind of sucking the energy. Like people are thinking about that instead of maybe what's going on in these races or paying attention to the commercials. Or I'm interested. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I was not where we, this isn't where I thought we would be at this point. I would expect it to be all election all the time. And instead, I feel like it's all coronavirus all the time.
I agree. And I will add to that a couple things. I thought, knowing how much money Connie has and had, I assume she still has some of it. I haven't looked at the pre-primary filing yet. I really had thought we would see just be bombarded by Connie Pillich ads. And I haven't really seen that. Here's one question
I'm
do have.
I'm bombarded with Joe Biden ads.
Yeah.
Like, I feel now, like everywhere is that in my face.
What I wonder is, oh, and she and Connie did, I think, a few weeks ago, launch her first TV ad. However, what I wonder is, did Bloomberg, because, and I was told this by multiple consultants, that Bloomberg drove up the cost of local advertising because he was spending so much money here. And so I'm wondering if that elbowed out some of the local candidates, or, you know, in terms of, you know, how they could spend their money, when they could start spending it. I'm asking that question right now. I haven't really taken a deep dive into that, other than, you know, I can tell you that the last check was, I can't remember the story or how much he had spent here, off the top of my head, but I know that he drove up the cost. And so the question is how much did that sort of elbow out some of our local candidates here locally, local cans locally, duh. Anyway, I'm going with Alicia, but it is not 100,000,000% confidence Alicia wins. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Connie wins. I know that that's, I'm not one for really, you know,
I heard
towing
you,
the line,
I heard a
riding
rumor.
Defense answers, but
I heard a rumor, or I saw this on our planner, that you actually are going to have a prediction column coming. So
maybe I'll change my mind.
Yeah, you better get out
Sunday.
That crystal ball. All right, prosecutor.
Oh, I think that one's an easy one, Fanon Rucker.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, and it's nothing against Gabe Davis, who's running against him. It's just, if you're watching what's happening, I mean, Fanon is just, these, you know, 14 years on the judicial bench, all his time as a lawyer. I really think, like, that's, is, you know, Gabe Davis's experience in federal court is not to be discounted, but Fanon's, I think, is just the longevity.
Name, yeah.
The longevity.
The name ID, and interestingly, he's no longer obviously on the bench, but he works for the Cochran Law Firm.
They're on billboards all over town.
Billboards all over town. I'm specifically, because I drive it a lot, is the Norwood Lateral. There's one there in a very prominent place on the Norwood Lateral.
50 West, too.
50 West, there's yeah. one. And I believe on that same billboard going the other direction is Alicia Reese's billboard.
Okay.
So that's if you want to get billboard space, like that's a good one to get, because it's right there across from Mercy Health on the expressway. Very, very visible. Again, nothing against Gabe Davis. A new person. It's so tough as a first time candidate. But I think that you're going to see, you haven't seen the last of him.
Definitely
running for local office.
I have to say, in the prosecutor's race, and yes, we're just talking about the primary. You know what I see? Joe Dieter's in full campaign mode.
Yes.
More than I have ever. I mean, I've been around a while, a lot of, you know, elections, and I have not seen, he's running a very traditional and heavy campaign even at this point.
Well, he's hired a top-notch team out of Columbus, and I mean, he even said on our podcast back in, what, late summer, early fall, that he was going to go all out and adopt that, you know, that data-based, which a lot of campaigns use
the
now.
Modeling.
But, you know, we sort of, you really kind of was made, I guess, really well known around here in that 2017 mayor's race when Cranley just stopped spending his money on advertising and spent it all on the ground game and the data gathering and all that. So,
I believe if he was sitting here with us, he would say it was worth every penny.
Absolutely. So, yeah. What's the next one?
Sheriff's race.
Ooh. You know, 2 months ago, I was all about Charmaine winning easily on this. I'm still going with Charmaine, but I think the gap has closed. I think it's going to be a real tight race. But I think that Democratic endorsement coupled with Jim Neal's Trump rally, I think that is the combination that pushes Charmaine McGuffey to the victory. What's your take on that one?
I agree that it's close. The sheriff, Sheriff Neal, is also in full campaign mode more than I think in the past.
Yes.
You know, you're just seeing him do like a lot of different things, adding these jail beds for treatment himself, which kind of Charmaine started, you know, but the sheriff is really kind of doubling down on that kind of method. Although, to be honest, when Charmaine started that, it was really groundbreaking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of people all over the nation looked what we were doing. And Terry DeMeo, who covers the opiate epidemic for us and kind of moving into other things now, sadly, with all the different kind of drugs that are coming, her huge meth investigation. Mm-hmm. But Charmaine was really a leader there. And we do know a lot more. And the sheriff has kind of, you know, taken that up and has done more. And people are saying, well, he's just doing it because he's running for election. But it's also very data-based now where people are like, this is best practices.
Gotcha.
And I think, too, we saw he with the diaper, the sweet cheeks, where the diapers for, you know, families who might need some assistance with diapers, they're very expensive. You know, you see him at a press conference saying, you know, we're going to do sheriff details and here's a $10,000 check for that. And I'm like, that's really trying to woo those people who might have swayed towards Charmaine, I think.
Really? Okay. To me, I think that all is really appealing more so in a general election. But I think it's too little too late on this. And I think, again, that endorsement coupled with the Trump backlash, I may be completely wrong. I really, this is one
These
where
are so I, close. I know. They were never really in this position where that you're
no,
like,
right.
you can't, too
where you're
close
picking
to call.
Democratic primary a lot. And
in the county,
in
right?
The county,
which you don't
correct.
Really understand. Like, we're still kind of getting a hold on how Democratic this county is now. It's,
That's
you know.
Right. And a slight
tinted
majority
blue, but is it actually blue? I think we're really going to find out this time.
And a slight majority of the Democratic electorate is non-city Democrats. So you would think, you know, that, you know, if you just went on that number, does that favor a Jim Neal, a Dusty Rhodes type of Democrat? It's so tough to tell right now. You know, but I don't necessarily buy into, let's go back to the commissioner race. Well, Connie has the county Democrats and Alicia has the city Democrats. I think that's kind of oversimplifying it. I think there are pockets of the city that Connie could get and there are pockets of the county that Alicia could get and, I just don't think like in terms of their countywide appeal, neither one of them, again, because
you also have to think about who else is on the ticket. You know, Fanon's going to draw people like the people who these other candidates, right, in a different race might be drawing out to vote. And then it helps others.
And also when you look at the top of the ticket now with Joe Biden, the Democrats really rallying behind him.
Which
How
we saw Mayor
play?
Cranley.
Does that play to more
of
the
endorse him in PG yesterday?
Yeah, more of the moderate establishment, you know, sort of keeps maybe some of the far left at bay is not the right phrase or whatever, but sort of, you know.
It's going to drive people to come out because,
yeah.
Yes.
So, anyway.
Like the turnout. First district.
I think that's Kate Schroeder wins that one. Again, she has a base of support. The core of the Democratic support in that district is in the city of Cincinnati. And, you know, she has all that. She's rallied all that, the amount of money she's raised. I think Nikki Foster is someone who also has a future. But being a Warren County Democrat, a lot of people don't know who you are. She has a great story, Air Force veteran. War veteran, Iraq war veteran, works for GE Aviation, had some, her son had some really serious health issues he had to overcome and is doing great now. Great story. It's just, again, it goes back to that base, and Kate Schroeder has the base of support, and that's all that matters in that race, you know, in this district.
Honestly, they are two really good candidates, and I think we've traditionally seen the people who try and run against Shabbat in that district, you know, they're setting themselves up with some name ID for other races later.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not wasted time, and it's, you know, it's more like, you know, blazing the trail. It's the beginning of things.
Yes. What else we got?
Issue 7.
I think it passes. I don't think it passes as much as by the wide of margin as I originally thought it would. I think here recently we've started to see, and it's way too late, by the way, but we've seen, the opposition rise up. I just literally over the weekend, or on Sunday and Monday, I saw no on issue 7 signs in Springfield Township and in Hyde Park. First time I've seen those, and here we are, you know, a little over a week from the election. Well, as we record today, we're a week from the election day. Too little, too late on that.
Here's something interesting about that race, I do think. So the way it's been positioned is, first, it was a bus levy, which is actually what it is, thank you, and important for all the bus things that this, you know, this region desperately needs. So that is, there's no question about that. And so I was kind of like, I think that when you're thinking about it that way, I was worried about whether it was going to pass. Then you saw, you know, the kind of wooing of these voters who don't live in the city with the streetcar divorce as a path. And then it really became, the narrative became about the roads, which I think that people love. You know, people worry about their roads and they want them fixed. And I have to say that has been, you know, the campaign has been stellar on that. But I think something that's gotten lost in it that might appeal to some voters is the idea that the earnings tax, that this is the sales tax, right? Which is not supposedly the best tax.
It's a massive sales tax increase.
Massive sales tax increase, for sure.
0.8%.
Not the best way to fund a bus system, necessarily. The regressive tax, as they call it. Although that is how most people do fund their transportation levies. But what has gotten lost is that the earnings tax, if you live in the city, the earnings tax is going to go way, if you work in the city, way down.
The point.
And it's going to seem like a tax cut to you. And I think that's kind of a message that's gotten lost. And I think that would appeal to some voters who aren't necessarily like, we need better buses or better roads.
I've started to really have some questions about this. I give credit to the folks who have pushed this. No doubt about it. We had Brendan
worked
call.
Hard.
Brendan call from the chamber and sort of board on a few weeks ago. I give those guys a lot of credit for what they've put together here. I do now have some concerns about the infrastructure piece of this. If you really dig down and think about it, it is a regressive tax. It is about the tax rollback in this case is only going to help the middle and upper class, the earnings tax. And basically you're taxing the poor to pay for the bus system when out of the other side of your mouth, you're saying you want to improve the bus system to help the poor. I'm just, that's a question I have. I'm raising now. I'm all for fixing the bus system. My biggest overall concern on this is the infrastructure piece. And I know there's been a lot of talk like, well, if we didn't have that, you couldn't get the county folks on board. My problem, though, with this $30 million a year, and you're going to have this little known board overseeing this money.
But it is a public board. They can be held
accountable. It is a public board. This has the makings in an, I'm just skeptical of it. Where's this money going to go? How are you going to get this money? You know, or is Montgomery going to see this for a new bridge? Is Harrison going to see this for a new road? Or is it just going to be money that's kind of willy-nilly passed out here and there, and it's only going to go to downtown? And these are all legitimate questions that I think people should have. And make your own decision on whether when you go in there to vote.
No, I agree. This is another of these like too close to call. And I've had this conversation with a lot of people. You know, the scary thing, and no one, and this is the other thing, which we have learned in this county, the threats don't work. Like, if you don't do this, then this is going to happen. And we have not heard that. But I don't really understand what the fix for the bus system is if this is not it.
Again, like, I think from a countywide taxing standpoint, this is how Cleveland, Columbus, and a lot of cities do it. You know, it's a very high sales tax increase. But I'm okay for the sales tax increase if it's just for the bus system. Again, I know it's a regressive tax, but then when you tack on top of that, it's a higher tax increase, sales tax increase because of the infrastructure piece to throw a bone to, you know, the middle class people out in Harrison and Madeira and all that. It's like, you know, you got to do what you got to do, and credit to the people who put the whole thing together, and they got a bipartisan group, and I've given them credit for that. It's been a very good campaign. The pro issue 7 campaign has been very strong. The business community wants it. What the business community wants, the business community gets, and I don't think there's any problem that it passes.
All right, am I forgetting any races, or is that it? I mean, obviously, we're kind of concentrating on what's in Hamilton County.
Yeah,
there's races all over the place, and of course, you know, with early voting, anyone who's been early voting so far, we're basically winnowed down to two presidential candidates who are having dual rallies in Cleveland. It's as if they forget that Cincinnati exists and there are a lot of voters down here. And guess what? We're tinted blue, and you might want to come down and try to sway these people. But if you want to have dueling rallies up in Cleveland, then that's fine. The Inquirer and the Columbus Dispatch are our news partners. Then we'll just drive up there.
I'll say a few things about a couple other races. I think Gene Schmidt wins. It's a 3-person race, and the two other guys in the race, I think ultimately it hurts that it's not a head-to-head, and those two kind of the third guy in that, Dylan Blevins, takes away enough votes from Joe Dills, the endorsed Claremont County GOP candidate. And Gene Schmidt returns to public office for the first time since 2012 in the state house. I also, another one I want to mention is this primary in Hamilton County on the Republican side for Common Pleas seat. Often don't see judicial primaries, but this one has become quite interesting with that flyer that came out last week. If you're not familiar with that, check out Cincinnati.com. Just search Kurt Hartman or Karen Falter, and you'll see this nasty flyer that basically a Hyde Park resident, Edgar Raguzis, put out on Karen Falter on his own. Says Kurt Hartman had nothing to do with it. He put it out in a coupon booklet, which the guy's company is the parent owner of. And it was a pretty nasty and unacceptable attack ad, but this guy Edgar,
I mean, really shocking in a judicial race.
Is absolutely, you know, 100%. I've talked to him, says I did it. He owns it. Kurt Hartman had nothing to do with it. Kurt Hartman has said it shouldn't be done. It's hate filled and it doesn't do anything to advance, you know, for voters to figure out who's the most qualified candidate in the race. A lot of GOP insiders were, quote, outraged about it. And let's cut to the chase here. The outrage was a bunch of phony outrage, based on the fact that Kurt Hartman, they fear Kurt Hartman is going to win this. And so they were trying to pin this ad on Kurt Hartman. And they see him as a threat. And I think my prediction on that is I do think Kurt Hartman wins that race as a former, as really the kind of the coast. You know, he's one of the founding board members of Coast and has really that, you know, strong conservative base as a former Common Pleas judge himself. I've seen a lot of signs for him out and around the county. I can't recall seeing any Karen Falter signs, not that yard signs decide elections. But when you start to put all things together and you're trying to make a prediction, My prediction is with Kurt Hartman.
I love your crystal ball. All right, you don't really have one. I should feel like I need to.
My foggy.
This one's a tough one. So I do want to encourage everyone that's listening this week, next Tuesday, election day for us, the Inquirer, we're going to have a lot of results in real time. We're going to be at all the parties looking to see who wins and loses kind of in real time. Jason is going to be in the newsroom with Catherine Nero, whom we love, and kind of, you know, giving like extra insight as these results come in. It's going to be live on our Facebook page, and you'll be able to see that on our website too. We did this before, and it's just, you know, I pay attention to it because I want to hear what Jason's hearing, and he's talking to all his sources who are kind of.
And I'm talking to you guys out at the parties and the events. And
so that's like for election watchers, you know, you might watch the TV and put that on, but I encourage everyone really to tune into that because it's where the insight is, the real insight with, you know, the experts. Jason Scott's going to be in and out, I know, and writing a lot of the stories. And so I really encourage people to tune into that on election night.
With that, Sherry, let's get to our special guest, who I forgot to mention at the top, is Betsy Sunderman, brand new Cincinnati City Council member, Republican, replacing Amy Murray, who actually, I believe it's next or this coming Monday, will be sworn into her new job in the Trump administration, the U.S. Defense Department, or Department of Defense. And we got Betsy to come in and sit down for an interview. And so let's.
The only woman on city council right now.
That's correct. Let's hop over and chat with Betsy. All right, special guest segment here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Pleased to welcome in as our guest today, brand new council member, Betsy Sunderman. Betsy, congratulations on your new position, and thank you for taking the time to come in. I'm sure this has been a whirlwind week for you.
Yeah, it's been a wild week, but I'm happy to be here.
A month ago, Amy Murray was a councilwoman in city council, and it's been quite a month since she said that she was leaving for the Trump administration.
What's this? Like you said, it's been quite a week. A month ago, you're the magistrate, and you're thinking, "Hey, you're a magistrate." And all of a sudden, a month later, you're sitting on city council. Is that like?
Yeah, it's been complete madness. So, yeah, I had to quit my job. I never thought 2 or 3 weeks ago I'd be quitting my job. But I don't know. Here I am. It's so bizarre. I'm just wondering if I'm going to wake up and go back to my old life at some point here. But it's been really fun and chaotic. So, yeah, I mean,
welcome to City Hall. That's what
started it. There was an article in the Inquirer that said Amy was leaving and that one of three people would replace her. And I did not see that article. I was at work. I was in court. And I start getting phone calls from people saying, "Are you taking Amy's spot?" And I said, "Is she leaving? What are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about." And then I started talking to a bunch of people about what's going on. And they all said, "You should try for it." And I said, "I don't know. Would I like that job? I don't. That sounds really interesting, but it's part-time. I'd have to quit my job." And then my husband pressured me and he said, "This is the perfect job for you." He said, "I've worked in City Hall for 10 years and I know you. And this is such a perfect job for you. Your skill set, your personality." He said, "You will love it." So he kind of talked me into applying for it. And that's
good.
Here I am.
As good husbands do. What did he offer you, like selling points? Like what was the key thing that made you be like, "Okay, you're right"?
Well, my husband's an introvert and I am an extreme extrovert. And he said, "You just get to go around and meet everyone in the city." He said, "This is your dream." He makes fun of me because when I come home, I always say, "I made three new friends today," or "I made it." And he says, "Of course you did. You meet everybody." And, you know, I always want to hang out with everyone and know everyone. So he said, "This is the perfect job. You can call any business in the city and go meet with them and hang out."
And you get to know parts of our city. It is something that I like about it, too, because you do meet lots of different people, but not even just in your professional role. I mean, it's the place where citizens come and you hear their stories, and then you can go into the community and you get to know things that you never knew about your city. I mean,
right.
I've been covering City Hall since 2014, and I still all the time learn new things about the city that we live in. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and legislation is a good fit for a lawyer. I mean, I've already been reading the rules on council, the city charter. Every time I'm meeting with anybody, I say, what law does this come from? I want to read the underlying law. And it's just a good fit, I think.
Your husband, you mentioned David Lang, who worked for John Cranley, is now assistant city solicitor.
Right.
Correct. Yeah. A brilliant guy. As like you said, has he been in City Hall for 10 years now?
Yes.
Did you still know a lot about City Hall, or did you guys talk much about City Hall over these last 10 years? Or,
yeah, I mean, he talked about his job just like anybody talks about their job. Yeah, it's been really strange. As I go around to meet with people, they say, are you Dave's wife? We know Dave. We like him.
Yeah.
It's strange.
I'm not surprised that people are saying they like him because he's a great guy.
Are you Betsy's husband?
That's what I said. I said, I'll know that I've made it when you become Betsy's husband instead of me being Dave's wife.
Had you gotten to know the mayor through David's relationship with him?
Yeah. Okay. I know John Cranley. I went to breakfast with him last week, and we were able to have a really frank conversation because we already know each other. It was really helpful.
That's a good skill set to have when dealing with the mayor.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
So you tell us kind of a little bit about your background. So you are a lawyer. I told you when we first started talking the other week, I still have you in my phone as the courtroom A prosecutor, which is when I started here. One of your first stepping stones over at the courthouse. So kind of talk about your dad and becoming a lawyer and your progression in that career.
Yeah. So I was raised by a judge and a teacher. So my dad ran for judge when I was 2, and that was the first time he won. And I remember his election night party. It was so much fun. I remember breaking things and being really excited. And ever since then, we've gone to festivals and parades and fish fries and all that stuff.
A politician's life.
Yeah, but those are really fun childhood memories for me. I know a lot of politicians dread those things, but I loved them. You know, my dad would say, here's a thing of nail files. If you hand all these out, then you can get ride tickets. Or he would say, if you stuff 100 envelopes, then you can have dessert. You know, that was life at my house. And we just all did it. We just did it as a family. And then every time we'd go to McDonald's or something, we'd have to put on our Judge Sunderman t-shirts. And that's just how we lived. And as a magistrate for the last 4 years, I have not been able to do those kind of things, outwardly political things. And I've actually missed that. I know that's so sick, but in a weird way, I've missed being in the parades, going to the festivals, all that stuff, and being able to wear all the political shirts. So I'm excited. Now my kids might get to be in the opening day parade and all of the fun parades this year. So they're really excited.
As an extrovert, I'm not surprised that you've missed that.
I really have.
People love that, like just to be out and meet people and shake hands and say hi to people.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in so many parades. I don't think I actually saw my first parade until I was an adult. I was in hundreds of parades. I thought it was so strange to actually watch one. But
you talk about your dad, longtime local judge, and still on the bench, right? Is it?
He retired, but then he came out of retirement. He's a visiting judge, kind of like a substitute teacher. So he's doing a bunch of those Durrani cases, Dr. Durrani.
Oh, yeah.
The spine doctor.
Yeah, he did a bunch of unnecessary back surgeries or alleged unnecessary back surgeries. So I think there are 300 of those cases. So I think my dad can do that full time until he retires if he wants to keep taking those cases.
Now, that's what visiting judges do, the hard cases that take a very long time. So the sitting judges can kind of move through their docket and keep things going.
Exactly. What's your dad? What are some of the things you've learned from your dad about being in public office? What did he give you any? I know he swore you in last week. I'm sure that was an incredibly special moment. Any advice he gave you when you took the seat?
I mean, I've been in politics my whole life. I've always worked for elected officials, so I feel like I've kind of learned this all along the way. Yeah. But he said, "Oh, you should get a campaign committee, and you should." And I said, "Dad, things are so different now. I had to do all of that before even getting an interview for the job." I said, "I had a 10-page campaign plan and everything before even being interviewed. So times are different.
Is there something that, as a citizen, you've been like, we need to fix, and now you're like, I'm a council person, and maybe I can help fix that?
Yeah, I mean, probably my biggest passion is always law and public safety. I mean, that's been my whole career, and I'm in District 3 for Cincinnati Police, and it's a giant district, and it's hard for the police to get around. When I lived on the east side, the roads were so fast over there, and now on the west side, it takes longer to just navigate the roads, and I know the police say that it's harder to just get to people's houses to respond to things. And we just started Shot Spotter in my neighborhood that identifies where gunshots are, and that happens on my street sometimes. So I'm very passionate about that. I would like to expand ShotSpotter. I would like to really go meet with District 3 and ask them for their dream list of things they want and try to make that happen.
You know, that's honestly, I think people love the idea of you coming, and you yourself drew a lot of praise from people. But the idea that you live in East Price Hill, right, that there would be a West Sider on council, you know, even for people who didn't know you, was very exciting. For it's because it's always been so shocking that, you know, Westwood hasn't had somebody on council, these huge neighborhoods and this, you know, many residents. And so kind of, I know that you moved, I remember when you moved and talking to Dave about everything, you moved from Mount Lookout to East Price Hill. Kind of talk about that, because it was a kind of at the beginning of East Price Hill's.
So I was raised in Hyde Park, very east side, and then I moved to Mount Lookout, and we had one kid, and we wanted a second one, and we were kind of growing out of our house, and I said, maybe we should get a bigger house. And then we said, but wait, we can't afford the house that we have. And we were looking at bigger houses, and it was just blowing our minds. And my husband at the time was working for John Cranley, who was very into the whole Incline District, and my husband said, why don't we go look over in that Incline District? And I said, oh my God, we're going to get murdered if we live in Price Hill. We cannot live over there. I want to be in a safe community. And he said, let's just go look at houses. Mm-hmm. So we looked at two houses over there, and I just could not believe how cheap they were.
And huge and grand and beautiful. The homes are just these historic homes, and they need some love now.
Yeah, we have a 6-bedroom house. It has stained glass and all the original wood. It's gorgeous. Mm. But of course, I was a prosecutor at the time, so I called the police department, and I said, could you run some crime stats around my possible house that I'm going to buy? And they did. And it ends up that the Incline District itself is very safe, but just like anywhere you live in the city, if you go a few blocks out of there, then there are dangerous areas, which is true of where I lived in Hyde Park, too. My street was safe, but if you went 3 or 4 blocks away in O'Brienville, Walnut Hills, there it was dangerous. So that's how the city is.
And that neighborhood, I mean, you have, since you've moved there, just so much has come up around it. Somme and Veracruz, we were talking about Veracruz right before we started. Jason and I are big fans.
Your husband who first took me to Veracruz, and I'm in love with that place.
Yeah, when we moved there, there was the Incline Pub, where we ate every night for about 3 weeks because we had no appliances. And Prima Vista, of course, was there. But the theater wasn't there, Veracruz, Somme Wine Bar, all that stuff. So my husband said, picture all of these things. And I said, oh my gosh, these things better be coming. But
Do you belong to the recreation center?
We go to the rec center for events. We mostly play at the playground outside of the rec center. They just put in a really nice playground. And in the summer, we go to the pool. They have water slides, all kinds of fun stuff.
I spent a week there, like, kind of chronicling what it's like inside recreation centers. And it's just such a community hub in there. And I loved it. And it was like draws from all different parts of our life and our city. And I learned a lot about our city there.
Yeah, the staff there is kind of surrogate parents for a lot of the kids in the neighborhood.
They're amazing. I can't say enough good things about the staff there.
You know, there's so much talk about the West Side. When we talk about the West Side, you think the true West Side is Westwood and the Price Hill neighborhoods. I know Kevin Flynn would beg to differ that Mount Airy also is what the West Side. But do you feel like, I mean, what's the reaction from the West Side been like to, you know, for your appointment? And also, do you feel like you're kind of carrying this huge area of the city on your shoulders going into this seat?
Yes, but I like it. Yeah. I like that they're all supporting me. I've been really active in the Cincinnati West Republican Club, and they every time I talk to community councils or the Republican clubs, they always say, no one listens to us at City Hall. They only listen to the East Side and downtown. So now I can go and say, I'm listening to you. Tell me all of your problems. And they're convinced that all of the money's going downtown and to the East Side. I met with someone who does stats for the city yesterday, and I said, I would like the stats on where the money's going in the neighborhood, where the economic development's going. So they're making some maps for me right now so I can actually show my West Side people what's going on. And maybe it's true, maybe it's not, but I'm going to get some answers.
I would like to point our listeners in the direction of Dan Horn, who has two very big stories coming about development and affordable housing and where the money is going. And it's not to the West Side.
Uh-oh.
So. And you want to change. I mean, Pete told me, Witty, I had him on my 700 WLW show last week, and we talked about you, and he was super excited. He talked about how folks in the neighborhood are excited. About. I mean, this has been over a decade now since anyone from Westwood or the Price Hills have held a seat, even though, nearly a quarter of the population are in those four neighborhoods, Westwood and the three Price Hills. Is that something you're going to go into this? Or is that a real big focus for you? Is that you're going to dive in and see how neglected the West Side has been, and you're going to be looking to change that?
Absolutely. But first, I have to verify that the West Side is being neglected. I know that my neighborhood on the West Side is not being neglected. I know lots of city money's come in. We're redoing the big Masonic Lodge. We got a lot of city money for that. So
there's been a lot of reinvestment in Westwood, too, I would say, but it's not really through the traditional incentives. They come in through different things. I think the mayor was listening. He would also beg to differ that the West Side is neglected. But when it comes to like incentives and things like that, but we have seen some progress definitely in the Westwood Town Hall, and what's come up around that has been amazing too.
Yeah, just that like development's amazing. But I mean, we don't want to neglect downtown. We hang out downtown all the time. I work downtown. We have always wanted to live near downtown, which is why we picked East Price Hill and Mount Lookout for our two home bases. They're both really close to downtown. We don't like living way out in the suburbs. So I need to make sure downtown stays good and keeps growing, but we also have to make sure these little working class neighborhoods are getting some attention.
I think we're going to hear about that a lot in the upcoming budget. You're coming at just the right time to like dive in and where the money's going, and the city's a little bit more flush than it has been in past years, God willing, with the markets right now, but it's on a good path at this moment. And I think you're going to hear the neighborhoods really say there's been some disinvestment in the little neighborhood districts, and they're going to want to see more come into the various places, Bond Hill and Roselawn.
Exactly.
You mentioned public safety, and obviously your work as a magistrate and in law coming up through your life. Anything going in, again, I know it's still, you're drinking from a fire hose right now. Like you say, you had 12 meetings yesterday with city folks, and so you're still learning this in a really quick way. Is there anything off the top of your head that you can think of in terms of public safety that you really want to tackle?
We need to make sure we have a new police recruit class every year. I know about 10 years ago, they stopped having new recruit classes for about 5 years. So now we don't have those officers who have been around for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I think they retire after 25 years. So missing a whole hunk of 5 years of recruits is a pretty big deal. So we need to make sure that as people retire, if 40 people retire, we need 40 new people and so on. And the Shot Spotter I mentioned to you, it's in Price Hill and Avondale, but we need it in more parts of town. We hear gunshots in my neighborhood, and I'll call 911, and they say, we already caught the person. Shot Spotter got them. So it really works. So we need to make sure they have everything they need technology-wise. I don't know if there's any technology issue now, but
if you ask a question like that, the chief will answer, and he's going to say, we want it all and we need it all. So just a warning, the chief, he will, you know.
Well, right. Everyone
when he gets
likes
these questions,
to puff
the chief
up their
has
budget.
Wish lists for sure.
Yeah, but then if they get something, then we say, then we need to know in a year that it accomplished something. So what are you trying to accomplish? And we'll give you this money. And then at the end of the year, I want to see the stats on if that was accomplished, if you want more money next year.
How do you bring a new, fresh perspective to city council How do you help to kind of hope? How do you hope to help city council turn away from what's really been a really embarrassing period here? And obviously, to be clear, Amy Murray had nothing to do with the embarrassment, the person that you're replacing. She resigned to go on to another job. But certainly, when we think about Tamiya Denard and the text messages, and what are any thoughts on how you can help this whole council steer in a new positive direction?
Well, I already know a lot of the members of council through my husband, so that's really helpful. I already know John Cranley. I already know P.G. Sittenfeld through him. I know Greg Lantzman because I contacted him once because he's on the neighborhoods committee, and he helped me with some preschool things, so I kind of built a relationship with him there. So I already know a few people on council, which is really helpful. And I don't have any preconceived notions about anyone. I'm not going into this hating anyone. Everyone's telling me what I should think about people, but I'm going to make my own decisions. Mm-hmm. I think I'm having lunch with Chris Seelbach on Friday. We've been texting a little bit, so I'm hopeful that we're going to have a good relationship. I can't get anything accomplished on council if I don't get along with any of these people because I am outnumbered as one of only two Republicans on council. So if I put up this wall and I say, I will only vote with Jeff Pastor because he's the only other Republican, then I cannot get anything passed. So I'm going to try my best to get along with people. And that doesn't mean that I'm going to vote for what they want me to vote for, but I'm going to be respectful and I will calmly negotiate things with people who are willing to do that with me.
And it has been good to see. Yesterday was the International Day of the Woman. That, you know, you replaced Amy. There's only two women on council from
one.
The election. One, one at the moment, but we do seem to be headed in the direction of replacing Tamiya with a woman too. If Jason's short list is to be believed, which it is to be believed.
That would be great.
So, I mean, how important do you think that is?
Yeah, it's crazy that there's only one woman on city council.
Yeah.
I mean, our city's probably half men, half women. I don't know. Aren't there 55% women or something in the city? So we should have a few more people, but these are the people the voters pick. So the voters are not selecting women either. So we need to pick some smart women and some smart men. We shouldn't vote just based on someone's sex, but we have to have all different races, all different sexes. We need to be represented.
Like, that's important as we see we're coming up on an election in 2021 and looking about who's running. Like, diverse, if you look to the past in history, the diverse councils seem to have accomplished the most because it comes with all these different ideas. And, you know, and we've said this on the podcast before, like, what's the next big idea? And so perhaps we're at a turning point again. I said this earlier and it didn't turn out that we were at a turning point, but maybe we are now and like going forward with some sort of big ideas that's really like makes us this next big city.
I hope so. Oh, I also get along with David Mann. He's in charge of the budget. He's friends with my dad and I'm friends with his son through law.
Yeah.
So yeah, very Cincinnati, right?
So Cincinnati. Not to throw so much at you, but you're probably it's not long till you're going to have to turn around and start doing all those parades, right? Like,
yeah,
and break out the Keep Betsy Sunderman T-shirts and
yeah, I'll have to figure out my campaign colors and start some fundraisers. I mean, the world I come from of judicial elections is very different because you only campaign for a few months every 6 years. But this is going to be
and without party affiliation, right?
Right, right. But this is a different ballgame. It's going to be nonstop campaigning and fundraising and parades and festivals. So some of that will be fun. Most of it will be fun. Some of it will be a lot of work.
And council's a lot of work. Like it's
I think it's as much work as you want it to be. So I'm treating it like a full-time job because I don't have another job. I had to quit my job. So I have nothing else to do but city council right now.
You'll be running in the first now new 2 year term after the voters decided to go back to 2 years from 4 years. You can be on council for basically up to another 9 years, right? I believe you can do full 8 years over four terms?
I think we should let her get through this week.
I don't know. I know that there's an 8 year maximum, but I don't know if the appointed time counts toward that.
No, it doesn't. So like you'll be able to run
all right
for another 4 year for four terms after this.
So oh, wow.
You could be on council for almost a decade, essentially.
Oh my gosh. Let me just get through this month.
Me too. Wait, that's how I feel.
Anything so far in your week on the job that you've gone around City Hall and learned like, oh, wow, I had no idea like the city did that, or just something that kind of surprised you? Like a department or something the city does or doesn't do that?
One really fun field trip I took yesterday was to the Emergency Communications Center. I'd never been there before. And, you know, now that the coronavirus might be coming, that is not an official proclamation on behalf of the city, but we all know that it's probably coming.
There's a summit today, the city summit to kind of deal, just to be prepared.
But at the Emergency Communications Center, I saw this room that's the Emergency Operations Center. I'm sure you guys have seen it, right? You probably have a chair there. There's a chair there for every big organization in town. I don't know if the news gets a chair, but, you know, they have the National Guard, Metro, police, fire, anyone you can think of in town. And every time some kind of disaster strikes, everyone gathers in this room. I didn't know those rooms existed. It's like out of a movie. And then there's a big wall with TV screens. It's very cool.
Real time. It's like real time plays you can see in the city from all the cameras can be directed there. The
same place where the 911 center is? Or is it,
yes.
Oh, it is. Okay, same building. Okay.
Same area.
Complex, okay.
Up on the hill. The windstorm is where we really first saw it put into use when, you know, that was a real crisis in the city with people without power for more than a week, and we really saw how that operated.
But they also use it for the flying pig and all kinds of big events in town. I didn't know that was there. It's good to know that all of our agencies can work together. That surprised me.
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, I think there's a lot of coordination behind the scenes.
Well, now that you're in elected office, I guess we can ask you this. Thoughts on other things? I know there's a big primary next week. I won't really ask you about individual races, but one of the things that is on the ballot is issue 7 and the transportation levy. You taking a stance on that? Any thoughts on?
Since it's only a week away and I just got appointed just now, I don't think I'm taking a firm stance either way on it.
Yeah.
I would want to meet with a lot of people before doing that, especially the voters, the community councils. I'd want to meet with the chamber. I just don't want to take a firm position on that. I see the benefits of it. I would want to sit down and really do the math.
Mm-hmm.
Are the benefits worth the extreme amount of money that we're being asked to pay? And maybe it is, maybe it's not. I don't know.
I did get a flyer yesterday in the mail.
I did too.
Featuring Bill Seitz.
I got that too.
Dusty Rose and Jeff Pastor.
I got that too. And I never get, I mean, only on issues is when I get mailers. And
oh, well, since I'm married to a Democrat and I'm a Republican, we get all the mailers. It's really interesting.
We get a lot of mailers at our house. I was on the phone with Jeff Pastor. We were talking about something that's upcoming when I walked in the house with the mail, and I was like, I'm looking at you right now.
I'm married to an apolitical person. My wife.
Because she's tired of hearing about it from
yes.
you.
Yes.
Jason is also married to the most patient woman in the history of the world, as is Alex Coolidge is too. As you walk in the house talking on the phone, I'm sure like I do every day.
Jason and I both have patient spouses. Yes.
Because you like me, you have two young children.
Yes.
You want to brag about them?
Oh, they're the coolest. So Natalie is 6, and she goes to Dader Montessori, and Callie is 3, and she's going to start at Dader in the fall as a preschooler. Yeah, they're really cool. We debate over whether they're going to be Republicans or Democrats all the time. When they do something really great, I say, oh, yes, they're Republicans. And when they do something terrible, I say, oh, God, they're going to be Democrats. But
they're going to absolutely love the campaign.
Oh, yeah.
I hear
they're
little kids
so
just
excited.
Love.
Yeah, I loved it as a kid.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You talked – yeah.
Yeah. Natalie, the 6-year-old, is really excited. She's already telling people to vote for me and and I was on the radio the other day, and she got to say hi on the radio, and now she thinks she's famous. So
Jason's children are not with us on the podcast today, unlike last week.
Yes, my 3-year-old was in here because our 2 babysitting options fell through on the day, which is a rarity. But
Jeez.
I know we've talked about babysitters before. It's the lifeblood of a working mother.
Yes, always scrambling for childcare. But yeah, but my husband said, if I get the opportunity to do cool things as a city council person to bring our six-year-old, if I only can bring one other person, he said, I really want her to see all the opportunities this is giving you and how great our city is. And he said, I want her to think this is a really fun job that you have.
I have one other question, and it's just, as Amy Murray was heading off to Washington, any advice, did she give you any advice in the seat, any pep talk or what?
That you can share publicly?
You can share about.
Yeah, I mean, she just said, my staff is amazing. Trust everything that they say. You can trust them. And she said, you'll just have to figure out who you can work with and who you can trust.
It's relationship building. Everything in City Hall is, and it's chaotic at times, but it's those relationships that matter when the big things come. And David Mann is very good at that with the budget time of like understanding everyone's, you know, needs and wishes in the budget and trying to balance that all. It is the hardest job in City Hall. I do think that of trying to get that done.
But you don't hear David Mann complaining about other council members publicly or anything like that.
That's right.
So I think that's how he's able to be in charge of a committee where he has to work with everyone.
That's right. Sherry, I'll give you the last question, if you have one.
I don't think I have a last question. It's more like I'm excited to watch what happens now as we kind of move forward.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic, and I and you're one of the reasons why. I think bringing new people in to this council is exactly what is needed to help steer things in the right direction. And I think it's a bonus in some way, like that you didn't have to wait till the election for some things to change. And
I think we need more lawyers on city council. Not that a non-lawyer can't do a great job, but lawyers are used to sitting down and being reasonable in negotiating without worrying about who we like or any drama. So I hope that PG appoints a lawyer.
Which,
who knows?
In terms of, it would just be you and David Mann, right? As the
lawyers. And John Cranley.
And John Cranley, yes, the mayor. How can I forget that? Anyway, Betsy, this is awesome. Thank you for taking it.
Yeah,
I know this
fun.
Has been a crazy week for you, and for you to take a half hour to come in and sit down and share about your new role and your family and what you got going on with City Council. Thanks so much for doing that.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
All right. Thanks again to Betsy Sunderman for coming in. Your final thought on our chat with Betsy.
I am excited to see where council goes with herself and, you know, who's going to be picked next to replace Tamaya. I believe that your short list, which started with Jan Michelle Lemon Kearney, the publisher of the Cincinnati Herald, is an accurate prediction. I think that we're going to see that in the next few days here. And so, you know what? Fresh voices. Maybe that is what we needed to, you know, shake things up. So I'm excited to see both her and our other new council person and where we go from here.
Just go get some things done. Stop the shenanigans. Fix 911 center. Deal with real issues. That's all my take on that. Onward on to our fun segment of the show. Unless you had another comment on that.
I mean, I did go to Clearwater with plane full of people. That's very Cincinnati of me to do in the beginning of spring. But I think we had some real Cincinnati moments here in the newsroom too.
Phil's Silent Phil has our So Cincinnati moment of the week.
So as you know, we're working on our beer bracket this month. And we came down to the final four, and one of them was Sam Adams Oktoberfest.
Cincinnati.com beer bracket.
Yep.
All right, who are the final four? Because, you know, some of them are very recognizable local beers, and then there's this other one. So tell us who the final four are.
So the final four, we had Streetside's Subra, which is a New England-style IPA. We had Big Ash's Backbeat Coffee Blonde, which is a new kid on the block. We had Sam Adams Oktoberfest. And finally, Gavel Banger, which was the winner of the bracket last year.
Taft's
Gavel Banger. Yep.
So you did a taste test. I saw this while I was away, and I was like, how come my job never involves taste testing beer? It only involves going over to City Hall and covering, as Jason would say, the shenanigans. So, all right. So you guys had a taste test, right?
Mm-hmm. And so the Oktoberfest is obviously a seasonal, and, you know, you can't get it anymore, so we kind of panicked.
I love that beer.
And I thought it was...
So Cincinnati.
That our own Sarah Brookbank happened to be sitting on a case, I think, just to get through the season until next October.
And so,
You know what?
So she brought that in.
She brought that in for us, and we were able to do the final four tasting just because of that.
Sarah Brookbank, one of our breaking news reporters. Shout out to her.
Yep, recently married.
Recently married. Congratulations.
I feel like... Of all the coronavirus prep that needs to be done, maybe we should turn to Sarah. I feel like she knows what's going on.
Stocking up on what matters.
Lovely.
Maybe. Did she, when you say sat on, you mean she has it at her desk? I mean, I'm asking.
She was sitting on it at her desk? Like literally sitting on it? Like,
don't warm a beer like that. That's a bad idea.
I know she had it at home, but that's pretty awesome. And so people have been voting. How many beers did we start with? 32?
It was a full bracket's worth. I'm not a sports ball
person.
All right.
You know, so. I sit by where the bracket is in the newsroom. So I've been kind of watching it whittle down. And it's amazing to see how many local beers there are on there. So I was at Clearwater Beach and there's some craft breweries there. My aunt lives there, which I went to visit her. And so I've seen Clearwater Beach since I was very little. And watched how it's changed. It's very Scientology-esque now. But there were some craft breweries, you know, in place of like those old, you know, beach bars full of, you know, rum punches. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about it with my cousin, and it's like, we're such a brewery town now here, and it's unbelievable. And that beer bracket really just showed, you know, what we are as a city. And it's been pretty amazing. I think that it really speaks to young people. And like, that's a good thing for our city. I don't mean to get philosophical about our beer bracket, but there you go.
I was trying to think of a Bernie Sanders joke when you said young people, but so I'll leave it on the cutting floor.
Who won last? Where's Rheingeist and everything?
Overrated.
Oh, those are fighting words in the city, I think.
Sherry, have you stocked up on your toilet paper, your Purell, your bottled water, your canned goods for the COVID-19? Is it COVID-19?
Yes.
Coronavirus.
I do a little stockpiling just in general as a coupon clipper, but no, I have not done anything extra.
My wife, right before we stepped into the booth here, sent me a text saying, all the stores are out of all these things. Like it was like three or four texts. And all I wrote back was, it'll all work out, which is what my mother-in-law she always says that line to us. Like, you know,
it'll all work out. When I need to worry, I will worry. But so far, I'm listening to the experts. I've been watching the news and listening, you know, what's coming out of the CDC and not like the politics of the coronavirus, you know, really what the facts are. And, you know, they're not saying to run out and do that. When they said, oh, you know, when people ran out and bought masks, you know, I was looking at like, what is the information on that? And they don't really help. And so then I'm not going to do that. I mean, am I washing my hands more? Absolutely. But, you know, we are always supposed to wash our hands.
My advice to folks is keep on living. Keep living your lives.
And I think in this case, I mean, I do think we need to listen to the experts.
Keep living your lives, folks.
All right. Follow Cincinnati.com. If you've been reading along, and in our main really is a lot of the local information about this. There's a summit today. Ann Saker has been all over this. What's going on with the schools? And I do consider our reporters not experts themselves, but they talk to the experts, real news. And it's the kind of thing, honestly, you know, I'm turning to read what I need to know. And so I hope everyone does that.
Yes. As the coronavirus, in all seriousness, as the coronavirus does, you know, begin to hit home here in Ohio, we've got you covered. We've got folks in Columbus with Jesse Balmert and Jackie Borchert all over this. We've got our health reporter here on the ground in Cincinnati, Ann Saker. Other reporters as well, Dan Horn, who are dedicated to watching this and keeping you up to date. So no one has this covered on the local level and in the Ohio level more than we do. So stick with Cincinnati.com. If you have any questions, concerns, comprehensive coverage on this, nobody covers big events and big news things better than we do. I would also like to shamelessly plug that nobody covers politics or sports or food or beer or anything like that better than we do either. So
I second that motion.
With that, I think it's time to wrap this one up, and we will catch you next week.